You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone and welcome along to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 9, Episode 14 coming your way this week. Kieran Burke and Gary Riley with you as ever. We're brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. Of course, the big story of the week in the League of Ireland, the departure of Tim Clancy from Cork City. So we're going to be joined by local journalist and author Dylan O'Connell. He'll be joining us on this week's pod to give us a sense of what is going on behind the scenes at Cork City at the moment, because there looks to be quite a bit going on there, aside from the manager leaving the post recently. So we'll have a look and see what Dylan has to say in a few minutes' time. But of course, we'll run through all the results from both the Premier and First Divisions over the weekend. We'll play the Predictions League, and we've got plenty in the BTS hotline this week as well. But Gary, we're recording in daylight hours. Do you want to tell our listeners why that is? Because usually me and you are here till all hours of the night recording these, but you've implored me to record early this week.
Yeah, well, look, it's Eurovision week. Some people may remember from last year, I'm a big fan of the Eurovision. So semi-final one tonight, tune in from 8 o'clock. Get Marty Whelan on in your ears and you'll be set up for a good evening. But Ireland is on semi-final two, which is on Thursday, so watch out for that.
A nation holds its breath. I've only started really taking any sort of heed in it in the last couple of years when I realised it's actually one of the biggest betting events of the entire year. Like, it's huge. It's one of the only markets where you will get money for every single nation. Like, if you have a horse race or a football tournament, you wouldn't get bets on every single participant. You get a load of money for the favourites or whatever, and then little drips and drabs, but like every single nation that is in the Eurovision will have a significant amount of money behind them. So I always just keep an interest in terms of a betting thing. So have you got any tips for me, any Eurovision insight for the listeners that might...
I'm afraid not. Much like me, League of Ireland content. It's
yeah, you were great last week. You were full of insight last week.
But no, normally a lot of people like... I like the Eurovision, but like there's fanatics, like the Eurovision Mujahideen, like they are crazy for it. So they have like their songs have been released over the last few months and stuff like that. I wouldn't really partake in that. I just like the event for the week that's in it. So I won a bit of money on in Moldova there. Good luck years ago. A great tune. Some internet fans would remember the Epic Sax guy. It was the same group that came back in 2017 and had a good tune. I think they came third. But yeah, look, there's a lot of bangers in it. It's really improved.
A lot of headbangers in it too.
A lot of headbangers, absolutely.
a little bit like this little league of ours.
Jesus, wall to wall headbangers. But yeah,
weird,
look.
Weird and wonderful.
Yeah, but look, by the time people are listening to this, I'll have enjoyed one evening already. So looking forward to semi-final two, and hopefully Emmy for Ireland does the business and gets us into the final.
Very good. I never thought we'd open a podcast speaking about the Eurovision, but look, I suppose we'll just go totally off track as well before we delve into the League of Ireland. I have to say one thing we never really talk about on this pod is GAA, but we obviously have a large amount of listeners in County Louth in particular, with the two big clubs there, Drogheda and Dundalk. And I have to say it was an amazing spectacle at the weekend seeing them win Leinster. I'm not sure if you dipped into that at all, but 68 years, you know, for any team in any sporting code to go that long without, you know, major success. It was some story for them, and then the whole side plot of playing Meath and everything. It was great to see.
Yeah, it was great for, you know, any team to break their duck after that length of time. Obviously, there's teams I hope never win anything ever in my life. But for somebody that doesn't really have much of a care for the GAA, it's good to see a team do, you know, break their duck, especially after the grief in 2010, which was major talk. But look, that's great. You know, it's such a long, long time, and particularly against Meath, great one great one to get over your rivals as well. So,
Of course, I'm living on the border here, so I'm living. There's some houses here with Armagh and Louth flags up, so it's been a bit of a mixed emotional weekend up here for some people. But yeah, 68 years, their first Leinster in 68 years. Longford Town almost as long without an away win, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Let's go into the Premier Division, and we'll start with a real statement victory from Shamrock Rovers. They beat Drogheda United by 3-0. Managerial masterstroke here from Kevin Doherty. He was getting frustrated with everyone talking about his team, you know, that they're title contenders. So let's chuck this one in and everyone will start forgetting about poor old Drogheda again. Was that what happened here?
I wouldn't exactly think so. Like, I wouldn't really think that he's thinking, oh, yeah, we may fill the togs for this game in particular and no one will listen to us or pay any attention. But, look, it was a poor night at the office for Drogheda. No matter what way you slice it, you don't want to be losing a game 3-0. I know you're going to the home of Shamrock Rovers, but at the end of the day, it's still a 3-0 beating for a team that was, you know, in and around the top of the table. But look, great result for Shamrock Rovers. I think we pointed out a few times, and when these two meet, we always pointed out, but like, their Drogheda would be a bit of a bogey side for Shamrock Rovers in recent seasons. But great opening goal by Aaron Green, really top notch finish. Takes it down well and lobs it high over Luke Dennison. Couldn't really do much about it. It was kind of snapshot as well. So, but look, they came out in the second half and they got their two goals in quick succession, and that kind of really took the guts out of Drogheda. You know, 2-0 down 10 minutes into the second half away from home. It's going to be difficult going, but I suppose with the way Drogheda are, like, it's probably always going to be a bit of a difficult one. Would you say?
Yeah, I just think, look, we've been saying the last couple of weeks that Rovers, we feel like they're going to start putting a run together. And I did say last week, I felt that they'd win this game and just get to the front. And this could be the start of, you know, the start of a really good run for them. It's that time of the week again, guys. I asked you about the title. Shamrock Rovers, are they most people's favourites now, do you think?
I don't really know whether they're most people's favourites. I think maybe, I know Bradley did well to even manage the team on Friday. He's been doing that much shite talk around the place, so fair play to him for that. But like, yes and no. Like they still have, like, they were good on Friday, value for their win, no doubt about that. But they have a large capacity to, you know, peg in a few bad results as well. So it's not just going to be plain sailing either. I would be up there though, because even when you look at St. Pat's and Shells, they're not really doing much either. So I suppose at this moment in time, Shamrock Rovers are the team, but I don't know, who knows what happens next week. Like,
and look, Aaron Green, you said he got a great goal against Drogheda. He scored a great goal in the game before. It was against Sligo where the ball was scooped over and he hit it on the volley. You've always said, you know, he'll have these little runs where he might get 8-10 goals a season, but he's not going to get your 20 goals a season. But again, there's no 20
who
goals.
Is?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's no 20 goal strikers. But that's one area you look at Rovers and think, if they could get a goal scorer in there, a Gary Twigg type character, then they probably would. But hang on, I'm going somewhere with this. There was reports last week that John McGovern, the former Down GA player, had signed. Now, they may have been premature. There's been no announcement yet. But he obviously won the...
To do what?
He's a footballer as well. He won the Irish Cup very recently with Dungannon Swifts.
I didn't know that.
I remember him being linked...
Well, maybe lead with that. Don't lead the fact that he plays the GAA.
he was linked with Dundalk in around this time last year, because I think at the time he was either playing for Newry... He definitely played for Newry at one stage. I think he might have played for Warren Point as well. But he was definitely... I think he was with Newry when he was linked with Dundalk, but... seems to be a bit of hype about this lad. I wouldn't know a whole pile about him aside from the fact he did play a little bit of Gaelic football for Down as well. But yeah, there's talk that he could be on his way to Shamrock Rovers, and if he could hit the ground running at Rovers, then they could be yeah, difficult to stop.
But I guess, but the something that's been said quite often is like the jump from the NIFL to League of Ireland is a large jump. I don't think a lot of people realise that.
Yeah, that's true.
Jimmy McGonigal came in and we were blowing about him here on the pod. He hit the ground fairly quickly, was doing all right, and then never really kicked on maybe second or third season. I still think he was a fairly good player, McGonigal, but like that can just happen sometimes. You go into a club, and particularly a club like Rovers, where you know they're up towards the top of the table, they're going to be creating chances. You score a few goals early on, you could just fire out of the gates and that could be it.
Oh, and then never be seen again.
Well, like, yeah, he could score 20 goals this season, and then in 2 or 3 years down the line, we could be saying, ah, do you know what, he had one good season, he's maybe not up to the grade, but like, a goal score in there this season, it's difficult to see anyone stopping them, really.
I think you're right, but like your dark horse for the year was Keane Kavanagh.
Hmm.
And obviously, we had reservations about that, and then he scored a hat-trick in one game. I don't think he's scored since. Or maybe a couple of goals.
You're telling me I know nothing about strikers, basically, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, well, less than F all. Like, I just mean, like, it's going to be, it's always difficult to get a striker. But, like, Keane Kavanagh has 3 goals this season. Owen Elding, which no one really mentioned, is near.
He's got 5.
5 or 6?
I think it's 5, but it could be 6. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, I thought he scored lately. He scored in the 2-2 draw there. So I think that's 6 now.
Right.
So do you know what I'm saying? Like it's going to be very difficult for any striker to come into this.
Yeah, but look at Moses Dyer. Moses Dyer has come in completely new to the league. He's top goal scorer with 8. So, like, can happen.
Yeah, of course it can happen. But like, everybody has purple patches and stuff like that. I'd say like with the like a Michael Duffy for Derry, he's been doing it for a lifetime. Patrick Hooban, when he's fit, yeah, he can do it as well. So I'm just kind of concerned that like they're going to this place. But I suppose look, you have to do your best and get the players in. I'd be interested to see
how it works.
Yeah, obviously, but also, like, we have players that are coming in, and these are like Shamrock. Like, should Shamrock Rovers be shopping there?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying 100%. But, like, what's the alternative? Is it trying to get a lone player in, like a Douglas James Taylor type character? Can they go and sign a player like Douglas James Taylor? Could they go out, you know, here's a load of money, draw it? What do you think of it? I don't know. I totally get what you're saying, though.
Just a final point on that. They had a band-aid for the last 2 seasons of Johnny Kenny on loan from Celtic.
That's true, yeah.
So they seem to be finding it difficult to get a permanent solution there. And obviously Aaron Green is still playing. So
Who knows, Kenny will probably end up back there at some stage. Shelburne 2, St. Pat's 1. A big win for Shells, given that they weren't really motoring going into this game, but it's a big victory for Duffer's men.
Absolutely. Something the really need it. As you said, you know, there are a few draws, a few mistakes. Like we say, we talk about Conor Kern's mistake last week against Waterford. He had to make a good few saves. But even the goal that Shells conceded was good pressing from Pats, but probably a bit of arrogance, I feel, at the same time from Shells. It's like, we're going to play around these people without any trouble, and Mason Mealy did very well to slot it home and in off the post, which is a
good to
classic
see
finish.
Mealy get a goal as well. There's been a bit of talk about him, I suppose, since his big news that he's going to Tottenham and hasn't maybe been banging goals in regularly. There's been a bit of concern about him, so it's good to see him getting them goals.
Yeah, but he's 19, like.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I still think it's better for him to be, and I'm not saying he is struggling, but I think there has been some commentary out there that he is struggling a little bit. I think it's better for him to be struggling in a men's team where there's pressure on, there's fans shouting and roaring at him, than in some field somewhere playing academy football and scoring a hat-trick. I think the environment he's in now will stand him in good stead when he goes to England.
Yeah, that's absolutely it's a great thing. Like, it's often been said, like, I'll say that a younger player playing men's football from an early age, like, I'll say we just talked about Owen Elding, for example, a young player. He did very well for Longford underage, scored a bag of goals, went to Sligo, and now he's in the first in the starting 11, and performing. as well as that. So, like, you know, obviously he comes from good stock as well, so that obviously helps. But there was a good bit of yammering on about Melia, to be fair, and he did have another couple of chances in the game. Probably could have done a bit better with Sumner. I know he hit the post as well. But I think it's good that he's getting a goal, and that was a very classy finish as well. Whoever hasn't seen it should look it up. But important win for Shelburne, has to be said. They were looking for it, and it was going to be a difficult night at the office for Pats. But you've often mentioned it, particularly with a Stephen Kenny team slow to start.
Mm.
We're long past the starting point now. And I'm not saying like losing away to Shells 2-1, and the winner was in the 90th minute.
Yeah, from your boy McEnroy. I can't give you the bonus point though, because you didn't get the correct result. You went for a draw. If you'd got the correct result, I would have gladly given you a bonus point, because you were saying he was going to score. But
what did I say that? Actually,
yeah, you did. Yeah, I wrote down here. You went for you went for Levy and McEnroy to both score in the game. So I would have given you a bonus point if you got the result right. But you didn't.
Ah, right, fair enough. Oh, you're so generous. Thank you so much. But yeah, like as I said, important win for Shells. But the Pats are fifth. Like they're proper middle of the road form. They've lost three of the last five. They're in fifth.
Keane is back. I know it'll take a few weeks for him to get up to full speed, but he started the game alongside Melia, so
yeah.
So you'd be able to back
points behind Bowles, like you know, they really need to get going. Like I know, you know, when Stephen Kenny came in last season, they won all the games and all the rest of it, and it was brilliant and it was wonderful. But like, I know they're only 4 points behind, but I would be expecting them to be right up there, and maybe a couple of points ahead. Work to do for St. Pat's. Like, they have an opportunity now on Friday, at home to Cork. You'd be expecting them to fill them in, particularly with no manager at the minute.
Yeah, we'll be talking more about Cork City with Dylan very shortly. A team that have a new manager and continued their very good recent form, Waterford, 1-0 winners against Galway. And I touched on it last week, Gary, that it only happened once since Galway came up that they had lost consecutive games. So I'd imagine this is obviously the first time they've lost three games in a row since they came up. So we might talk about Galway in a second, because I do think we have some hotline questions about Galway as well, from some concerned supporters. But Waterford, from a team that looked in big trouble a couple of weeks ago, they can't stop winning now, and a good start for John Coleman. They were 1-0 winners in this one.
Yeah, it was a tight enough game. I think for anyone that hasn't seen it, like, look back at the highlights. The number of chances that were saved by poor keepers was insane. Brendan Clark was
26 shots in the game.
Yeah, I'd well believe it. But Brendan Clark was sensational. The number of chances, like really good chances for Waterford that he saved. He stopped Parkamond a couple of times, Lonergan as well. So he kept them in the game, but unfortunately it wasn't enough to get anything out of the game for Galway. They were good, Waterford, like they did. Probably deserved to maybe win by more, but it was just a one goal. It was kind of like a header from, I think it was a corner. That just nicked in off the post. Yeah, so kind of really good win for them. Like, it keeps them going, and as you said, puts the, you know, three losses in a row. And we were talking what seems like only a few pods ago, where we're comfortable in the European spots.
Forget about that. We were talking about could they win the league?
Yeah,
about four pods ago.
And that's what I mean. And like, you know, there's 6 points separating first and eighth. I think we've kind of obviously it's plain to see for anybody that 9th and 10th are going to be languishing. It's going to be a relegation dogfight, as they say, for Cork and Sligo. I think there's no real way out of it for them, unless someone comes in Cork and saves them, and maybe Sligo do some business in the off in the window. But it's just bizarre that, like, as you said, talking very recently about Galway keeping a challenge up, but now they're in eighth spot. I don't think it's like, obviously none of this is fatal, because we saw Bowes, they were down in the same position. They've won four of their last five.
Yeah.
They're buzzing along. Now they're in fourth position, level on points with Drogheda. So, you know, it's kind of, it's pointless looking at the table, really.
Yeah, really is. Sligo Rovers 0, Bowes 1. This is probably, aside from the Tim Clancy story, this is probably the other big story of the weekend. The Moose, up and running at long last.
Was he up and running? Oh, yeah. Starting 20 goals. Oh.
Tragic defending.
I'll have to eat me words maybe come the end of the season. Tragic defending, especially like Sligo missing the penalty early on. I didn't really see there was much in it, to be quite honest. It was kind of just a coming together. I think it was Cornwall that brought him down, but good save by Taratska. Keeps them, or it wasn't actually a save, it was off the crossbar, sorry. And from Owen Elding, but just not what you need when you're down there.
No,
like it could have been a very decent point, let's say, for Sligo if they manage to, you know, go 1-0 ahead, they get a draw of it or even hold on to the win, and it just wasn't to be. The defending was poor, and you could nearly see why goal or Sligo are down there in a lot of ways. Bowes did create a few chances throughout the game. I can't remember who it was, but maybe Clark, I honestly can't remember, but he walks around four or five people and the ball pops up to him and he just smashes it over the bar. The lack of challenges, you know what I mean? Like you're looking at a team that are conceding lots of goals, losing games, they're at the bottom of the table. Maybe stop the lad that's beaten five of us. Do you know what I mean? Like it's still very ropey at the back for Sligo. You can see why. I know you mentioned the defending for the goal. It's just not good. Ball chipped over, two lads there for Sligo. Neither of them do anything, and Moose rams it into the top corner. Long time coming, but look, he kept plugging away. But the defending is just brutal.
And we'll just link that in now with Cork City before we go to Dylan. Cork beaten 2-1 by Derry. Again, we're saying there's a lot about Sligo and Cork. They're not playing that badly, but they're just not getting the rub of the green, particularly Sligo. They're missing the penalty and then conceding the late goal. But Sligo, you'd have to think, will take a lot of encouragement from looking and seeing what's going on at Cork City. Now, yes, the manager has left, but there's a lot of other stuff going on, and we'll be touching on that with Dylan very shortly. But I know Tim Clancy gave that interview to So Off the Ball today, and a lot of talk about, you know, no assistant manager. He mentioned there was no opposition analysis for one of the games, and he had to do that himself. And you know, if you're someone involved with Sligo, you'd be looking at that and thinking, right, there's a bit of turmoil here, boys. This is where we need to really now put the pressure on over the next few weeks.
Yes. But then if you look at that game there against Bowes, they really need, like I was going to say, just the defending. I know I just mentioned it, but like the defending is so poor. It doesn't really matter what Cork are doing.
Yeah.
Or if there's extra turmoil there.
Yeah, fair point.
From listening to Clancy, and it was a very good interview. I found it quite open. The turmoil has been there for a good while, and we can see in their results. I wouldn't be looking at Sligo going, oh, that's grand. Jesus, thank God. Cork are even in more shite than we thought they were, and now we're going to, you know, bounce up the table or get ahead of them into a playoff situation. Sligo have plenty of their own issues on the field that they don't have time to even think about Cork City, to be quite honest. As I mentioned, the defending is quite poor. No one taking any ownership. Like Bowes are doing quite well. They're putting wins together, scoring a lot of late goals, but they still can be got at. Do you know what I mean? Like they haven't turned into, you know, AC Milan 2006 or whatever defense. Like, do you know what I mean? That's not the case. So they need to, they did have opportunities. I know they missed a penalty. They had other chances. They just need to be, they need to get better at defending themselves. And while yes, it's good that a bit of added shit for Cork is great, but that's not going to save them.
Yeah. Derry, maybe not as convincing as some of their more recent wins, but an important win nonetheless. They're right up there now.
Yeah. another good win.
Two of the new boys scoring as well. Holt, a lot of attention around his move, obviously, and then Boyce, who I've probably been slightly hard on, but good to see these players starting to contribute. Again, I mentioned them in recent pods, but Gavin White now is starting to really play well. He looks like a good addition. So maybe is it just a case of these players are starting to get to grips with their surroundings at long last?
Ah, it is, yeah. I think it took a while, and actually you said it like after about five or six games, like it's time to get going here. And look, there's no, I don't know how much you can look into it when you're playing away to Cork, but at the same time, decided to go ahead and do it. I have to say some of the I don't know what the keeper was doing for Jerry's opening goal. For anyone who hasn't seen it, he kind of comes down into no man's land and is chipped over into the 6-yard box. He's miles away and it's just nodded in. Any Egot would have scored that, to be quite honest.
Yeah, like he's made some really good saves, true, since he's gone in there.
Yeah, exactly. And even in this game, he made some really good saves as well.
That in the locker, that kind of rush of blood to the head. We saw it last week against Drogheda when he absolutely clattered Alua for the penalty. And again, they're rushing off the line when there was probably no real call for it. So that's something he's going to have to improve on, particularly when you're down that end of the table. You can't afford to be making mistakes like that.
Well, that's it. And I think that, I suppose it comes with experience and stuff like that, like judging stuff and saying, all right, I missed out with that. I'm in my house. But I suppose, and maybe there's probably an aspect of it, like where you're down at that side of the table where you're like, okay, I need to go and impact something here. I need to be constantly making an impact, where he could have just stayed where he was and just gathered that ball in, no problem. Yeah, probably a good bit of controversy here. I don't know if you saw it with for Cork's goal, there's probably 40 yards in the difference where the ball went out. I don't know what the ref was thinking. The ball went out and allows the throw to be taken quickly, miles away from where it went out.
Derry and Rovers 2.0 from a few years ago in Tallaght. Remember that one?
Absolutely do. Yeah, that was great crack as well. That was 1-0 game as well, that one.
I was going to bring this up later, but I'll just, while we're on that subject now, and this is something I've said time and time and time again on the pod. I think, to be fair to us, I don't think we've really mentioned officials that much this season on the pod compared to previous seasons. At the end of last season, the hotline every week was rammed with questions and comments about officials. And
I tried to be a bit more balanced about it, definitely, rather than being as hot-headed as I normally would be.
Exactly. I genuinely think we haven't really gone in on refs at all this season on the pod, but we were both at UCD and Longford on Friday night in the bowl.
Tragic.
Forgive me, I don't know the ref's name. I don't know the assistant referee's name. I could look them up here on FAI Connect, but I'll not name them, right? That was a very easy game to referee refereed an under-12s game and thinks he's great or whatever. But there was no challenges, real low tempo to the game. Very easy game to control. It's not like you were doing the Milan derby or whatever, some of the Serbian derbies or something. It was grand. Like
Fenerbahce Galatasaray.
I've said this before. I think the big thing about officiating in the League of Ireland, a lot of the referees seem to really switch off when the ball goes dead, or when like there's a kind of inconsequential passage of play, or like there's a bit of head tennis going on or something like that. It's like they just switch off and they're thinking about something else. Like how many times on Friday in the Longford game did the linesman, who was 2 or 3 yards away, he couldn't make the most basic of calls. Like there was one where I think the UCD keeper boots the ball out and it hits off two Longford Town players and goes out for a UCD throw. And the linesman is looking this way, he's looking that way. He didn't know what to do. And he was about to raise the flag and give Longford the throw-in. And the referee had to tell him, no. And give him the wee nod. And he put the flag the other way. And that kind of thing happened 2 or 3 times. And it was just real basic stuff that then builds towards situations where players get frustrated, supporters get, and that's when you start to lose control of the game. And that is something we say a lot on this pod. The referees seem to lose control of games in this league very, very quickly. And it's because of very basic lack of switching off and lack of concentration. That's just my opinion on it. I'm sure refs listening in, and we know they listen, will have an entirely different view on that. But I think that it's concentration levels dropping off at key moments in games that gets refs in this league in a lot of bother.
I think that's a very good summation of it, and probably something that probably hasn't been mentioned before, like I know it's or framed in that way, where you're there looking around to, for two different men to decide which way the throw-in is for. And then you're like, I can just imagine being on the pitch, you're going, right, which pair do you see? Why the hell did they not know what is going on? It's right in front of us. Jesus Christ. And that's only what you're thinking. And then this happens to you three or four times in a half.
Yeah.
And you're getting progressively more annoyed. Like, especially, like we'll say, for example, you're 1-0 down. This ref is making a hams of it. He's on my case for nothing. And it boils into something that's
exactly
not doesn't exist. Except the referee's indecision, inaction, and like we say, delay in blowing for stuff.
The linesman Friday in the ball was particularly bad, like very, very poor. And I seen people kind of, a few supporters giving him stick, and he's smiling, he's smirking. Right, that's, you know, you deal with the abuse whatever way you want. If I was a ref, I'd probably do the same. I'd probably laugh in your face if you were calling me this or that. But I think back to a game recently we're at as well, the most recent El Clasico, Midlands Derby at Lone Longford. The linesman was having an absolute nightmare
he was
getting dogs now off the supporters, right? And I'm not one of these people that's like, oh my God, the ref shouted this back, or the linesman shouted this back at a fan, because they get dogs abuse. So if they want to give a bit back, you know, I'm not one of these people like, oh, you can't say that, you can't do that. But I was just, the linesman in that game turned around and he told a Longford supporter to either shut up or F off. I can't remember which it was. But I was like,
Let's say shut up.
I was like, how does he have time to even think about engaging with someone when he is having an absolutely horrific night at the office? That should be the last thing on his mind, is to turn around and give a bit back. Like, you don't have time to be getting involved in that. And I see a lot of that as well with some of the assistant referees in the league, getting involved with supporters and people around them. Just focus on the job.
No, I understand where you're coming from, particularly if you're having a difficult night. Like, the best, you know, it's the best referee, and referees will say it. Like, you know, you have mouthpieces like, I don't know, Howard Webb and Mark Clattenburg, and everybody's you know, being interviewed now, that's fine. You're probably getting a bit better of a picture. I know, actually, to be fair to Mark Clattenburg, he did the one, he was interviewed about when Chelsea played Tottenham.
Oh, the Battle of the Bridge.
Battle of the Bridge, yeah. That was an insane game. Like,
has he done an interview on that? He has.
I think he has, yeah.
Right, that'd be interesting though.
And he was going on about like all the stuff he got wrong. Like, it should have been probably three red cards apiece night. Like, he lost the complete run of it. But no, I'm not saying it's that bad. But like, there's games been lost that aren't 10% as bad as that. You know, that was a biblical game, and referees are losing the run of it. Like, you know, and even there, like Eric Yarrow for Longford Town, should have passed the ball into Danny Norris late in the game. Longford Town could have snatched all 3 points there, and he held on to the ball, but he was still had possession. Player got in front of him, and I don't think he touched him, to be honest. The player went down handy, and it was a free out, and Eric was like, you know, I didn't even notice that bad of a reaction. He was frustrated that he gave a foul away, or what the ref deemed to be a foul, and straight away up with the chest and up with the yellow card. It's like, where do you think you are?
Yeah.
It's UCD Bowl. There's like, what, 200 people there. Lovely Friday summer's evening. No badness in the game. I think the only two yellow cards that he gave were from Outon.
Yeah.
You know, it's frustrating. Oh, I will say one thing. There was a couple of times that he made some very good calls. A couple of times in the first half, Longford Town were kind of on the front foot, and we're doing a bit nice bit of pressing, and a UCD player did the whole usual, oh, I feel a man, he's, you know, within 5 yards of my back, I'm going to throw myself on the ground. And the ref didn't have any of it, to be fair to him. The way of play on, actually gave a free kick to Longford Town because your man jumped on the ball. So there was some good points, but like, as you correctly mentioned, it's like, go off to La La Land.
Oh, yeah, that all goes to waste then when you such a basic, simple thing, and you're not switched on because the ball's going to play,
and you're looking
at the birds in the sky or whatever. You know, it's just, it's not great. It needs to be better. But
yeah,
then again, as we always say, like, would things like that improve if they were full-time professionals and they were getting that bit more training and a bit more, you know, no more than the player and support at the big clubs. I'm sure they have sports psychologists and all that. Are the refs getting that? I don't know. But anyway, look, that was a bit of a referee.
There's no need for sports psychologists to go pay attention to what you're at in front of you. It's for 90 minutes. We're not asking too much of you.
Yeah. Just before we go to Dylan and get ourselves back on track here, just final point on Cork. You mentioned it recently that we kind of didn't really cover it, but they signed a new striker, Denario Daniels, and he's got a couple of goals. He got a goal in the game against Derry, so that looks like some bit of a positive, at least for them. And they have players coming back from injury. So we'll see who they have in mind in terms of a manager. Maybe Dylan has a name or two for us. But we'll go to Dylan now and we'll hear all about what is happening at Cork City Football Club on this week's Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, I'm delighted to say we're joined on this week's show by Dylan O'Connell, journalist and author. And he covers both Cork City and Cove Ramblers on a regular basis. So we have Dylan on to talk about recent developments within the Cork football and region. Dylan, good to have you on. I suppose it's been a dramatic week on Lee side, as it so often is. Tim Clancy, his departure by all reports, it caught everyone on the hop and by surprise. Is that the feeling you're getting as well?
Yeah, people genuinely seemed surprised. I know I was surprised, but I probably found out the news at the worst possible time, and that was coming out of the door of a concert. My one day off, I think it was my third Friday off this season. So yeah, I caught a lot of people by surprise, but which it says a lot because the season hasn't been going the way people expected down here this year. But again, the squad is decimated by injuries. So it's not one of those situations of, oh, they need a management change. So it did catch a lot of people off guard.
Can you understand why he's made the decision?
I can to a certain extent, because there must be some feelings of frustration there, because Jamie Hammond left a few weeks ago and there hasn't been an appointment there. And he's essentially having to be judge, jury and executioner, as you know, every manager has his assistant, they're each other's ears, one suggests something, the other one says no, that they're providing an alternative point of view. It's like, and a good team has a good two good managers behind it. The famous example is Peter Taylor and Brian Clough. Just off the top of my head, that's a good one there. A couple of years ago, Cork City, you had John Caulfield and John Cotter. They worked together seamlessly. After they originally worked together at Avondale United, and then you just had Tim taking on everything by himself. There were coaches around him, but he didn't have his assistant, and he said himself he would have trusted Jamie Hammond with his life. And ever since then, that must have taken a massive personal strain, trying to manage everything by himself, be the public face of the football club while trying to manage a team, look after coaching sessions, do opposition analysis. It just sounded like a messy situation.
I know he spoke today on Off the Ball as well about at times this season there hasn't been an opposition analyst either. How can a club of Cork City's stature and even any Premier Division club really in this day and age where there's so much investment in the league and everything has become very professional, how can a club like Cork City not have an assistant manager and an opposition analyst in place?
It's mad to think of, especially I interviewed Tim last January in Mayfield after a friendly against Treaty United, and he said part of the way he wanted to set up the season is to reflect the opposition. So if he was playing, I'd imagine Shamrock Rovers, he'd play with a low block. If he was playing with, let's say, at the moment, Sligo Rovers, because they're below City in the table, if they're playing them in Turner's Cross, I'd imagine it would have been a more attacking formation, and which I thought was an interesting way to go about it. And the fact that that was the way of thinking in pre-season, and then they went into the season and it comes out there's no performance analysis, and that was something which would have made sense, let's say, 20 years ago, because again, this way of thinking was only coming into the game 20 years ago. But now it's a chosen thing, and it's not like information like this is hard to find. When you look at situations like, you know, you have LOI TV, you have
White Scout.
Like it's you can get information these days, and there's people out there. There's people in college in UCC in MTU Cork who would be willing to come in and do these programs. You people doing their A license. There is people available, and like as someone like I'm from Cork, like that's just not good enough to not have those there for the club, because again, the league is moving more professional. It's no longer like I remember. Sorry, for a small anecdote. There was an event on for the club's 30th anniversary in 2014, and John Caulfield said before they played Bayern Munich in the second round, in the second leg over Munich, they had steak and chips, and he goes like, "We don't do that anymore." And now it's 2025, and you know, we don't do that. We have to have, you know, a performance analysis that is is such a part of the game now. It's like a nutritionist.
Mm. That interview you did with Tim is interesting. What you said there, that he was kind of thinking about mirroring the opposition. That sounds to me like a manager that almost knew going into the season it was going to be a struggle, and you just have to pick up points as opposed to trying to build any grand visions of a certain philosophy or style of play. It sounds like he knew it was going to be a scrap from the get-go. Do you think he was frustrated as well about the squad he has gone into the season with, that it may not be strong enough to do anything other than scrap around the bottom two all season?
I think he was more being realistic than anything else. Like, the way he phrased it to me up Mayfield that day was that he knows what the club's position is as a newly promoted club, which I think is a very fair standing, because the City probably got relegated in the worst possible time in 2020. The Ligue 1 has boomed in popularity in the last 5 years. There's more money coming into the league. There's more TV, which means there's more advertising. Tim said it himself today, and I have a piece about it next week's Echo and Cork. So City don't have that. They wouldn't have the same funding streams, whereas if they were in the Premier for the last 5 years and competing, even at mid-table with the odd cup run, that's still more of a moneymaker than playing in the First Division. So I think Tim saying that last January was just more an admission of where the club was at that moment in time as a footballing body. Because again, the other option was the club splashes out and brings in players, which is a whole other conversation. But it was more a realistic ambition, which is where the club need to be, is look, set a realistic goal, which is staying up. And again, when you look at the size of Cork City, the support base there, the fact that they're the only team in Ireland's second city, because Cove technically is in the county, that should be a realistic ambition. And what he was doing made sense at the time. It's just what he didn't foresee was the fact that the team would be ripped apart with injuries.
Mm. I think there has been signs, though, in recent weeks that frustration levels have been growing. I think back to the interview Tim gave where he spoke about his team being too quiet on the pitch and how if players didn't change, he'd move them out, he'd get new players in. So it's clear he's been frustrated with things within the football club. And as you said, maybe not having that number two to unleash some of that frustration on and bounce ideas off. It's all just culminated now in his decision to walk away quite quickly.
Yeah, and like, when I've seen City play this year, there's a very, like, what should be there isn't an 11. But there's this, but with the injuries that's there, like, let's say you've Benny Coote out at the moment, Sean Maguire, Rory Keith, Sean Maguire was out, Rory Keating, Manic Dykstra. You're calling on under-19s players to come through, you're talking about academy players to come through, or players just getting used to the pace of League of Ireland. So there's no experienced heads there on the pitch. Like, Greg Bulger was supposed to perform that role as kind of a player coach role, where he would technically be the number three, but he'd also be on the pitch. But again, that's a lot of responsibility just to have one player of that age, of that experience, because the next player after him who will be in that position will be, you'd say, Keats or Maguire. But again, they're up the pitch, they're not in the middle of the pitch, they stay in the traffic, the flow, the pace of the game, trying to get back, make those decisions. Like, and that's one thing that was evident. There was a distinct lack of leadership on the pitch. And I'm not trying to call it any specific player in detail. It's just that's the way things planned out. The team got decimated with injuries. Under-19s players were called up. They're still learning the pace of senior football while having to deal with the pressure that comes with wearing a Cork City jersey, walking through town on a Friday afternoon and people going, oh, that's Cork City, that's Colin O'Sullivan, that's Harvey Skeeters, that's something that people say you have to get used to in Cork, and young players have to get used to that themselves. So there was a lot of things came together, but it was the worst possible combination of things to come together. You have lack of leadership, you have injuries, you have no assistant manager, you have one person in charge of everything themselves, you have a team, a newly promoted team. It's not like a team is in a rebuilding job after periods of success, and from the stands people are crying out for a competing football club in Cork, because the last season that hasn't ended in relegation or promotion for Cork City was 2019, unless you count 2021, where they just had a very lukewarm First Division campaign and finished, I think, sixth.
Mm. You said you were leaving a concert when you got the news that Tim had left. I was driving back from UCD Longford, and my first reaction was, oh God, this is going to bring a lot of attention the owner's way, because you know yourself, you're on social media like I am. There seems to be a lot of angst from sections of the fan base towards the owner, and I'd imagine that has only amplified now over the last couple of days, given this news.
Yeah, and I've seen Dermot take some flack, but he has taken flack before. Mm. Like, there was a lot of people who were annoyed after the playoff defeat in 2023 against Waterford and how that season panned out with no permanent manager brought in, but the fact that there was a director of football brought in that people didn't really agree with, because there's a very specific way of operating down here in Cork, which I feel like it's very hard to explain from an outsider's point of view of it's, but Dermot has taken flack before, and it's more people are frustrated as well, because like the takeover is agreed in 2022 and Dermot has put money into the club. He's put, I think he said in the Rebel Army podcast recently, 1.4 million he's invested since he took over 2022. Then you had the first campaign ended in relegation, they came straight back up, and now it's kind of they're facing relegation again, and people would get annoyed. That could play a part in things as well, but there is friction there. But again, football is a physical game. City could win 5 in the bounce now, they could go on a cup run next, you know, then as an ounce of people then are looking at things in a very positive manner. It's just it's that is football, though. The owner is always the public face of a football club.
Yeah, there's obviously been some unrest regarding the ticket prices as well. So there's a few things there that are kind of bubbling under the surface a little bit. I just wonder, in your own opinion, how much of the criticism for the ownership and the running of the club, how much of that is justified and how much of that is just supporters letting off steam on social media after a bad sequence of results and events off the pitch?
Like, we're never happy in Cork, and I feel people need to understand that like it's all or nothing. Like, it's like, I remember I did a piece last year for the Echo. I know this is a bit of a tangent, about 2005 in Cork, and you had Roy Keane captaining Man United. Cork won the All-Ireland, the Camogie All-Ireland, Ladies Gaelic Football, and Cork City won the league. And we were like, yeah, but we never won the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship. And that's kind of, you know, it's very all or nothing here. But if everything's going good, everything's going great. If everything's going bad, everything is going bad. Like, there's no in between here when it comes to Cork football. So some of the annoyances are justified if you look at the club as well as a whole. When take the women's team, for example, and I know this is probably a separate point to make, is the fact that the women's team are now fighting kind of a mini league at the bottom three of the women's Premier Division, with some of the best players to play trade away from Cork, the likes of, let's say, Orla DC, Marie O'Sullivan. So people will be annoyed from that point of view. People would also be annoyed with, let's say, some of the best players from Cork currently aren't playing for Cork City. You have Matt Healy, Shamrock Rovers, and Josh Unahan. You have Admiral Riley playing for Derry City. And even last year, you had Shane Griffin playing for Shelburne under Damien Duff. And like, look, no one's going to begrudge players because, again, players have short careers. They need money. They need money to fall back on. And all this kind of stuff. And it's the fact that, you know, there's obvious issues with the City team and there's obvious solutions there. The likes of, let's say, they need midfielders. There's Matt Healy and Adam O'Reilly, but they're playing in Derry. So there was a frustration there where people are saying, why aren't we spending money to bring in these people in? Well, the club are talking about, let's say, the Celtic friendly. Well, they're pulling up the ticket prices, yet the club is still in the same position that it was 2 years ago, and that's fighting the void relegation, because it's one of the most, I think it is the most expensive ticket in the league. So there is that frustration there. So yet some of it is justified for a certain extent, where some isn't, though. But again, that's football, and that's just the nature of Cork.
Yeah, and I suppose Darren, from his perspective, you know, getting the next appointment right is going to be absolutely huge. As you said, if he gets someone in and they win 5 games on the bounce, this is all forgotten about. But if he gets someone in, or it takes a long time to get somebody in and things don't turn, then you'd imagine all this noise will probably amp up over the next while. As I said when I introduced you, you also cover Cove quite a bit. Exciting times down there. I know there's been some concern and reports maybe regarding the ownership model and all the rest, but at the minute it's going very smoothly on the pitch. There's a very realistic prospect we could have a Cork City Cove Ramblers promotion relegation final, and all those ex-Cork City players playing for Cove, of course. I mean, a Cork City fan, that must be their worst nightmare right now.
Yeah, and like, it's funny because the two clubs never had, you know, Bows and Rovers, Bows and Shells and, like, you know, the Dublin clubs, they're pretty entrenched rivalries, and that's the standard of rivalry in Irish football. Whereas with Cork City and Cove Ramblers, they never had that relationship. They've always existed in different leagues. They were like, their only regular meetings would have been pre-season competitions, or the Munster Senior Cup, or the League of Ireland Cup back when that was in its heyday. So there was never grounds for a rivalry that didn't extend beyond the whole, like, oh, we want to beat the other team in Cork. there was never a bitterness to it. There was never a rivalry there. But this year, it's been amped up a little bit because they're competing Cove for the first time in a long time. This is the fourth time in the last 15 years the club has challenged for promotion. They did it in 2017, 16 and 17 under Steve Henderson. Almost got the playoffs in 2020. Then they did the season in 2023 where they got through the promotion relegation playoff. So it's a really interesting time, especially when you look at, let's say, the current Cove team. You have Keen Coleman. You have even Jason Abbott played for the Cork City's under-19s for a season when they won the under-19s League and Cup double in 2013. So there is that huge crossover there. And if they do meet each other, that would be a massive grudge match. And that could really set the rivalry up from being, let's say, a local thing with a few, you know, jibes here and here, to having real weight and bite to it, which is something that's really lacked in the fixture. Because, again, they don't play each other in very, very big, meaningful games that often.
Yeah, exciting times for you as a journalist to be covering Cork football, that's for sure.
Yeah, and like I think the funny thing about Cork football, if we talk about it, is let's say take Cork City last year. You have Cork City in the first division, Cork City are in a rebuilding job. Meanwhile, you have all these players going to England. You have Alex C.D. Byrne signing for Burnley. You have Quevin Kelleher starting for playing 120 minutes for Liverpool as they beat Chelsea in the EFL Cup final. You have Adam Eda scoring the winning goal in the Scottish Cup final. You have Alan Brown is playing, I think, right now, actually, for Sunderland in the EFL Championship playoffs. So you've two very different sides of the game in Cork. Even you've Rockmouth won the FA Intermediate Cup. Bree Mahan got two back-to-back finals. And then there's just, like, there's two sites, but it's in Dublin because you've so many different clubs and you've so many different scenes. You've so many, like, in Dublin, you have Shells, Rovers, Bowes, Pats, you have UCD, you have kind of Bray, but I don't want the Dublin bus to give out to me. And then the other side of that, you could have, what's the best way to phrase this? You'd have, like, you know, everyone exists in their own pocket, their own little universe. Whereas Cork is just, you have Cork City, you have the Munster Senior League, then you have Cove and East Cork. You have Cork City Women as well. But, like, again, there's always something happening down here, and it's always either, there's always one extreme going on and one the opposite of an extreme.
Yeah. Look, it certainly gives us plenty to talk about on this week's pod. So, Dylan, thanks so much for your time. We'll speak again soon.
Thank you.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, thanks to Dylan. That's all the lowdown on Cork City for now. I'm sure we'll be touching on them again next week and in future pods. But let's go into the first division results from the weekend, Gary. Kerry, and a nice little linkage here with Cork, actually. Colin Healy, who knows, in another world, maybe he could have been taking over Cork City for the second time. But in his first game in charge of Kerry FC, he picked up a 1-0 win in the Munster Derby against Treaty. A lovely way to start.
Yeah, great way to start for him. He'll be delighted with that. Probably didn't get much of a say in what was going on in the week, but doesn't really matter. You can hang your hat on that, and a great way to set himself up now for the rest of the season.
Just on that, we don't know whether he would have been interested, not interested. If he had the option now, Kerry and Cork, or if you even had the option, Gary Riley, you have the option. Kerry, you can take over the Kerry job, bit of investment going in there, a bit of a grand project for years to come, or you can go to Cork and try and keep them up in the Premier Division. What do you think?
I don't. I think it'd be a difficult one, particularly when he's been there before. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a go of it, got them promoted. So I'd say, like, he would be interested, would have been interested, but, you know, it's a team at the bottom of the table in the first division, or in the Premier Division. Lots of players injured. I know there's a lot of stuff players due to come back, but I think it would have been a very hard job, especially, like, he's only gone out of there, what, two yeah. and a half, 3 years?
Yeah.
I think a clean slate somewhat in Kerry, lots of opportunity for growth. Like, we'll say, if they finish in the playoffs this year, that would be a monumental success. So, you know, he's a couple of years to, you know, and he'll probably have a lot of say in how the club is ran. I know you mentioned Billy Dennehy last week, but, like, he still knows what he's doing. Colin Healy. So
I think he's in the right place, to be honest.
I think so too, yeah.
Mm. Just sorry, because you've pushed forward the recording this week, my notes are all over the place. We probably should just very quickly again just touch on Cork. Like, for a club that size and for any Premier Division club, you know, this isn't 10 years ago where it's mixing and gathering. These are fairly professional outfits we've got now. It's not ideal for a team to be without an assistant manager for so long and to be without an opposition analyst for games. That's not ideal.
Oh, it's suboptimal. There's no question about that. I think, and to be fair, if anyone listened to Tim Clancy on Off the Ball, it's on YouTube if you haven't. But I do think it's like, he mentioned the cost, do you know what I mean? Of players and salaries and stuff like that. And I think that's a big thing where maybe, I'm not saying there's any budget. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Cork fans would say that there's not enough budget for stuff, but it's not great that there's no video analyst of some description for a Premier Division, a full-time team in the Premier Division. He mentioned,
because funny enough, you had I don't know, you weren't really having a jab, but you were having a bit of a jibe recently about when Dundalk came to Longford, how much staff they had. That they had lads to do stuff for lads. lads to hold stuff for lads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's a First Division team and a club that's been in a heap over the last 18 months, and they seem to be well beefed up staff-wise. So there's no excuse really for Cork City not to be fully resourced.
Well, yeah, particularly, and like, you know, it was as I said, it was a good interview with Tim, and he mentioned, you know, it was difficult. There was people that were close to coming in and stuff like that, but like, and he mentioned it himself, you know, it was a great opportunity to get involved in the big club and it's Cork and this and that and the other. And I know he mentioned other stuff that I probably didn't agree with from this season, but I find it just difficult to see how that is allowed to occur in this situation. These are just things that you have to go and do. And for a club in the Premier Division, fighting it out, you need to go and get some of these things righted as soon as humanly possible. And they didn't manage to do that. And it definitely contributed to Tim Clancy leaving. Any thoughts on who might go in there? I know it's very early days.
I think there's a Fenn lad that was there before.
Is he still in the game? Is he?
Oh, sure, who knows? Keith Long, I suppose, is the big name that's available at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Surely would have to be considered. He hasn't. Yeah,
probably makes sense, wouldn't it?
I think so. He's gotten a tune out of a lot of teams. To be fair to him, so yeah, would be probably a front runner, I'd say.
Right, let's get back to the First Division. Finn Harps 0, Athlone Town 2. Again, you just never know what Athlone team is going to turn up, really.
No, you don't.
Still no news of a takeover or a new manager there yet either.
Yeah, and it's really hard to know. Like, you hear some things and then, you know, oh, there's going to be a press conference and there's absolutely no press conference. What are you talking about? And
some mad old things flying around online, things we will not be touching with a 50-foot barge pole. But it's just hard to know.
Yeah, I don't know how long this can go on.
No.
And I actually have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, really?
No.
I'll send it to you later. Dude. It's a very long read, though.
Oh, that article?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I did end up reading that. Jesus.
We'll not be.
Yeah.
Leave that where it is.
Yeah. But it's definitely interesting, like a lot of the recent history, like of Athlone, where there's crowds coming in, crowds going out, the Portuguese crowd, these boys, that boys. You know, it was a player from every part of the world was in the squad a couple of years ago. So it's just very hard to know. But like, I suppose a much needed win for them on Friday. So I suppose that's something for them. But I think the overarching point is that they still haven't got anybody. At the top, it's going to be very hard to know what way that all shakes out. But look, a good win on the road for them as well, and definitely need it. But some nice play. I must say the opening goal was really nice header. I can't remember who it was from, but it was Ben Feeney, excuse me. Really nice header, but and he was under a lot of pressure as well. So, but probably hasn't got going. Like
I don't know, is he starting a whole pile?
That's
of
what
games,
I mean. But like, yeah. Why not? Like I'd say, I think we were kind of at the start of the season, like we're like, oh, they got Dean Williams in there.
He's been
injured. Ben Feeney. Yeah, I know that, but like. We would have thought.
Oh no, he's starting the vast majority. I'm just having a look at his stats here. He's been of the 14 appearances, 11 have been starts. So that was only his second goal, to be fair. So yeah, as you said, maybe hasn't
got going.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, look, an important win for them. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Just on the Harp side, like.
Oh, they'd be disappointed with that. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, not unexpected either. I think they're
limited.
Limited.
Wexford Word nil, of the pod. Cove Ramblers 2. We'll be speaking Dundalk Bray in a minute, but it's starting to get very, very interesting up the top. And of course, Dundalk going to Cove on Friday night, which we'll be previewing in a little while.
Are you heading down to that, are you?
No.
really good win for Cove. Probably a win that we mightn't have thought they would have been getting earlier on in the season. They were a bit mix and gather them. Dropping points and doing some.
Wexford have been poor for a few weeks now, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Great start to the season, but probably reverting to type, would you say?
Don't really know. They've been very particularly poor in recent games. That game against Longford, they were very bad. So, a bit worried.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, like. I don't know, it's just not ticking for them. Like, a 2-0 loss at home is not great. Like, I know they managed to get a goal back in the Longford game, but they were poor at the back that night, and they were poor here. Yeah. Gave away a penalty, but some of the chances that Cove let go were real guilt-edged. They're giving up a lot of chances. Like,
yeah, just on Wexford again, you made this comment about them last week when we were reviewing their defeat against Longford. About the passing around the back, this sweeping pass here, sweeping pass there, switch the play to this lad and switch it back. Are they overcomplicating and overplaying a bit? We know Stephen Elliott's gone in there, and we know his background in academy football and all the great young players that I've given plenty of spotlight to, the likes of Caelan Harnett and some of the other young lads down there. Are they overplaying and overcomplicating it a little bit? Because I think, I could be just thinking of this very simplistically, but I look at Aaron Dobbs and Mikey Rowe up front, particularly Dobbs, a force in the air. And I looked at the Longford game, no kind of crosses really going into the box. And when they did get into wide areas, the final ball was shite. So, like, if they just get crosses into the box, surely them lads are going to score goals.
Yeah, you think so, but also like we saw with Wexford that they were still giving a when they did get into those situations recently against Longford, like they were still putting it wide, like they weren't even getting some of those chances on target. But I think the overarching thing is definitely the way that they're it's almost time wasting. It's like they're approaching the game when they have three goals, like they're three goals ahead. I couldn't believe like the lack of urgency. Like we'll say they were playing a team that hadn't won in a while in Longford Town, an opportunity to get a few points on the board, and they didn't manage to lay really like much of a glove on Longford. Like, and it was bizarre to see the amount of pricking that they were at. Pass it up to this lad, pass it up to that lad, shoving it over here, shoving it back. Very, very in. I don't want to say like no cutting edge, and a lot of the time when they did try and put a bit of pace or a bit of urgency into it, it broke down very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So they need to get a hold of it themselves. Also, they need to get a hold. Two lads sent off there on Friday against Cove. The first challenge was a straight red card. I don't know how anybody could have any questions about that. I don't know if you thought it was a. Nearly got the Cove lad at the knee nearly. And you know, the idea that there was a question about whether that was a red card or not is just bullshit. And then they got another lad sent off for doing something stupid because he got a yellow card shiting onto the ref during the first red card, and then he pulled the lad back. Straight second yellow card, very easy decision. Can be no complaints from any Wexford person, player, fan, lad from Wexford, anybody at all. Like, it's really poor stuff, and that's two players that they're without now for the game at the weekend. Really poor night at the office for Wexford.
Moving on then, Dundalk 2, Bray 2. Bray leading going into the last couple of seconds of this one, only for Arubi to get an injury time equaliser for Dundalk. But Bray had a man sent off in this game as well.
Yeah.
When I seen the score coming through, 2-1 Bray, and it's kind of a, and I know they did concede obviously a late equaliser. We've spoken about our concerns that maybe this Bray momentum won't keep going because of a lack of experience.
Yeah.
Like, to be 2-1 up in Oriel Park, a man down, that was kind of a moment where I stood up and was like, oh, wow. You know, that's a very mature thing for Bray to do. Now, they concede the late equaliser, but this was still a result that you'd sit up and take notice of.
Yeah, you would, absolutely. Like, they did well to go ahead in the game. Good hardiness from Dundalk to not, you know, shit the togs completely and keep going until the final whistle. I do want to point out, though, that Bray goal should have never occurred. Like, the keeper should have just got put that out for a corner or whatever. It was desperate keeping. The free kick wasn't that good.
Just to mention, Enda Minogue played for the Dundalk under-20s the other night, so he'll be back the weekend, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and definitely good for Dundalk. Like, you know, shoveling that shot onto the crossbar is just not good enough there.
Only one win in the last five, Dundalk, and that was against Longford.
Unfortunately. Yeah, but like, is that just more of a blip? Like, they've been really, or have teams got to measure them a bit more, do you think?
I see a bit of crying going on.
Oh,
from Dundalk quarters, let's say, about teams coming to Oriel and sitting deep and frustrating. Like, I can never understand when people come out with that, because
yeah.
Like, what do you want them to do? Part like the Red Sea. Oh, off you go, lads. Entertain the fans here this evening. We're only here to take part. Like, you have to go and break these teams down. And when Dundalk went to the Premier, if Dundalk went to the Premier Division next season, they're going to have to be the ones to sit in deep at times.
Because yeah, they're going to be creaming themselves for a nil-all draw facing 40.
Away to Shamrock Rovers or whoever, yeah. So I don't buy that. They need to get rid of that mentality about, oh, poor us, we're having to take on these two banks of four or whatever. That's simply part of what you're going to have to do this season.
That's total bullshit. Like, it's up to them to break teams down. Like, if you remember, one of the many times when Longford Town were in the Premier Division last, they played Shamrock Rovers three times. I think Rovers were ahead over the first three games, like 10 minutes or something like that, because they just won the game in the last few seconds.
Yeah.
And particularly the one, I think it was Liam Scales got a header in the 95th minute in Tala during the summer. And it was like, oh, Longford didn't want to play football. It's like, you're talking about a team that has lost like 15 games out of 20 this season. They're going to the home of the champions in Tala. What are you looking for, you dose? Like, it's a bizarre type of complaint. What they should be doing is like, well, maybe we should be better at breaking down these limited teams and or playing in four banks of four or, you know, two banks of five or whatever. I don't know. But like, it's a bullshit complaint. Get over it. You're the team at the top of the table. Only team in the first division full time?
Yeah.
So shut up. That's all I have to say about that.
That's fine. We can move on. So that brings us to UCD 1, Longford Town 1. Longford took the lead through Emmanuel Olufemi. Back-to-back goals for the local lad, but UCD hit back on the stroke of half-time. A very poorly defended goal from Longford, a bit like the goal they conceded against Wexford recently. A lot of kind of statuesque defending. And then in the second half, UCD with a real onslaught. They hit the crossbar four times in the second half, but couldn't find a winner. But again, probably something we've said too often this season, it was a poor second half display here from Longford.
Yeah, I'm not... like at times it was okay, but I think the second half.
No. Poor second half display.
Yeah, let me finish. I don't know if it's I can't put my finger on what it is. Is it that the teams are coming out like, oh, we need to change how we're playing in the second half against Longford. But I think it might be maybe not reacting quick enough to changes that the opponent is making. But yeah, I think plenty of times when it was like, what are you doing, lads? Four hits off the crossbar, as you mentioned. Are you including that header that was like nearly level with the goal?
I'm including them all, but I shouldn't include the strike from like nearly the halfway line. I don't know who hit that, but it would have been one of the greatest goals I'd ever seen.
Oh yeah, that was a rocket. That was class. And bing off the crossbar as well.
Yeah.
But everybody's understanding it was just some strike, but...
That makes it sound like an unbelievable UCD performance though, but it wasn't. Just want to touch on UCD. We've been saying for, you know, pretty much all season, they'll come good. That's one of the weaker UCD teams I've seen in the first division in, you know, as long as I've been following it, really.
I know they've had shy teams now playing down through the years, plenty of them too.
Well, in recent years, you know, they've always been up there, thereabouts playoffs. They may or may not finish in the playoffs, but there's not a whole pile to them, is there?
No, there isn't. I think that's a good point. Like, while you just mentioned that they hit the crossbar four times, like there was some invitations, let's say, to take those shots by Longford Town.
Like, we're probably comparing them as well to teams that had, you know, stars and future stars, your Liam Kerrigan's, your Collie Whelan's, your... whoever else has gone on from recent UCD teams. Whereas I'm looking at the team at the moment and, you know, there was a lot of excitement, understandably, when Ronan Finn went in there. He's not really massively impacting games. I look at the lad up front. He's a real handful, Doyle. Big, big handful. Mm. But is he a Colin Whelan? Is he a Liam Kerrigan? No, he's obviously not. Brennan, lovely player. He didn't play the other night. But again, you know, he went to a Premier Division team. He couldn't get a kick of the ball for Drogheda. So you know, even someone like what was the lad at the back? He's playing up north now with Cliftonville, Jack Heaney.
Mm.
Like, people had different views on him, but I don't know if they even have anyone of that caliber in the back line, to be honest. So it's probably just not as strong of a crop of players as has gone in years before.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with that. Like, and it shows with their table position and general play, like they're not the same team that they were. I'd be inclined to agree with you there. But like, they do have players that can make a difference. Some of their, like, I did find like some of their, like they do have very crisp play. Like, they pass it very well. They're able to take control of the ball. At times of their night, like particularly in the second half, like a lot of times the second touch was a tackle for Longford Town.
Just to mention as well, if people were wondering, the pitch, there's plenty of grass on it now, which is good.
Oh, it's garbage.
I don't know how, as far as I can think, UCD is probably the only ground outside of Tala that has sprinklers that come up through the ground, proper sprinklers, not this crack of, I remember watching LOI TV one night, I was watching Derry, there was a lad going around with a power hose,
trying to
water the pitch.
Yeah.
You might as well be pissing on it, lad, on a sunny day. But like, they have the underground sprinklers in UCD, and they put them on about half an hour before kickoff, and they actually did soak the pitch because I walked across it and my shoes were wrecked. So I was like, wow. Like, so how can the pitch be in such a heap when you have that facility there? And like, even driving into the campus the other day, there's more digging going on than, you know, some place out in China. Like, there's pitches been built everywhere, and this drove past a hockey pitch, a hurling wall, this or that. And, you know, what should be the crown jewel, a League of Ireland pitch, is in absolute tatters. I cannot understand it, but it's rock hard. It's so hard.
Yeah, crap.
Like, there's huge craters.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
It's crazy like how bad it is, but there is actually a good covering of grass on it now. I don't know how they got so much grass on it compared to the, you know, it was a beach a few weeks ago. So
I think they have, like what the GAA have, I think they have a grass, like a sod supply on campus somewhere.
Right.
but I don't know where it was. That sod supply must have been out in Turkey because it was patchy as all hell there the other night. But look, I know what you're saying about all the digging and stuff like that. Let's not get into that, you know, state-funded operation there. But like, yeah, it should be the best pitch in the country, bar none, considering the amount of play that it gets, like with rugby as well. They probably have a heap of full-time staff in it, but, you know, as a state employee... sorry, I won't go into that actually.
Right,
not good enough is the bottom line.
Yeah, what we will go into though is the BTS hotline. So let's get ourselves over there for this week and see what our listeners have to say. And let's see who's up first.
We don't do the predictions first.
Oh, the predictions league, of course. Yeah, see, my notes are all over the place this week because of you. Eurovision. Never heard the like
of one time a year, 1 week a year. That's all
I have. The semi finals as well. It's not even the final.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, look, I'll only watch the World Cup when it gets to the final, see who wins. Yeah.
Well, that's what we'll have to do in the next few years because there's going to be so many fecking games at 110, is it, the next World Cup?
What?
100 and something? Come up from 70 something.
Qualify.
Yeah, yeah, crazy. Anyway, right. You're right. Good man, keeping us on track there. BTS Predictions League. So, look, a bit hastily put together this week because of Gary. So I had to ring a friend that do like on... Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I had to ring a friend. I had to ring the old soon-to-be father-in-law again this week. Now, he did get the top points last week, so it's kind of a winner-stays-on situation that's going on here. He got 10 points last week. He got two correct scores. He got Wexford Cove, and he got UCD Longford, funny enough, and he got three correct results. So he got 10 points. You were next best with 9 points. You got two correct scores as well, Cork, Derry, Waterford, Galway, and I got 8 points. So that leaves the table like this. Listeners in front on 85 points, heading towards the century mark. You're second on 64, and I'm third on 60. So let's go into this week's. And again, it's Jerry Lennon Dundalk FC fan that is playing. And we start with Kerry against Wexford. He's going for a 2-1 win to the Kingdom.
I fully agree. Fully agree, particularly with the two sendings off last week for Wexford. They're in rag order at the moment. And I think Colin Healy will be looking forward to this one. Get a run on them early on. I think... I'm actually going to go 2-0 to Kerry.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-0 to Kerry as well. Yeah. Cove against Dundalk. Jerry going 1-1. He doesn't see the...
Oh, he's afraid. He's afraid.
I'm going 2-1 Cove.
Yeah, Sam. I think there's an opportunity here for Cove now. They'll be bigging themselves up for this one. Put these boys down. Particularly down in Cove. Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 to Cove.
Should be a huge crowd out for that one. Treaty against UCD. Nothing to fear here for Treaty, really.
Absolutely. Took the words clean out of my mouth. They have a great opportunity here to get one over on UCD. I'm going to go 1-0 to Treaty.
I'm going to go 2-0 to Treaty, as is Jerry. Bray against Athlone.
Another Astro Derby. There's not more Astro Derbies in this bloody league.
So hard to know what Alone turns up like.
Yeah, I think, and I think it's going to be a shite one this week. They had a good one last week, a shite one this week. I'm going to go 2-0 to Bray.
Roll out that Gattuso clip. 2-0 Bray, you're going. Did you watch the John Coleman clip yet?
No, I didn't. I'm too busy.
Someone else said it to you as well the other day. Yeah. A town player said it to you as well. Right, okay. Jerry going 2-1 Bray. I'll probably follow him. 2-1 Bray. Longford against Harps, Saturday night.
Saturday night in Bishopsgate. I'll be missing the Eurovision final for this.
I was just thinking that. Like, yeah. All the fuss about...
So what am I going to do? Ring up the FBI and go, lad, I need to watch the Eurovision.
Kick off 3 o'clock in the day.
And actually, I missed it last year as well. It's bloody raging. That's 2 years in a row now. The FBI need to get their finger out and give me a break on Eurovision night. I think, like, Longford's got home. I know they've only won 3 games all season. All of them at home.
Yeah.
But they've been decent enough at home. I know they pegged that in with a couple of really poor performances against Dundalk and UCD, but they were... okay at times against Wexford. Much better than what we've seen in recent times. I think Finn Harp's going down 2-0 to Athlone won't help them either.
Mm.
I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Town.
Okay, I think there's little to nothing to separate the two sides, to be honest. I think early in the season we were having a bit of crack here about Harps and limited this and limited that. I think these are probably, at this moment in time, the two most limited teams in the division. So I think they'll share the points like they did when they last met. I'm going to go 1-1. Jerry, going for 2-0 win to Longford, though, which is great to see.
I just thought one thing, something that Longford Town have been missing is Danny Norris.
Yes, that is, he could help with that limitedness.
Absolutely. And he looked fresh. He looked ready to go on when he came on for a while there on Friday.
I'd like to see for this game himself and Luke Wade Slater start on the wing. Slater's been playing fullback. I think he's doing well there. He's doing fine. He's experienced, and I actually like you. I think Longford's a very quiet team. Linking in with something Tim Clancy spoke about recently about his Cork team. I think Longford are very quiet, but I think Luke Wade Slater is definitely a help with that at the back. He's communicating with players around him all the time, but he's probably our best crosser of a football. So I would like to see him that bit higher up the pitch. So I'd like to see him one wing, Norris the other, and let's get some crosses into Olu Ifeamy while he's on form and see what we can do. So that could be the way into the game for Longford, but for now I'm going 1-1. Right, into the Premier Division. Waterford against Shamrock Rovers. Two in-form teams.
It is down to RSE.
Yeah, there should be a good crowd out for this.
Yeah, hopefully so.
Small enough crowd at their last game, actually. It dipped under 2,000, but I suppose, I don't know, good weather and all the rest. It does actually have an impact. Like,
Shamrock Rovers coming to town.
Yeah, no, it should be a big crowd out for this.
Should be a big crowd. I'm going to go for probably a frustrating night for Shamrock Rovers. One thing that I was impressed with was the amount of chances Waterford created. Now they won't get as many, but I think they will be getting on the score sheet. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. Yeah, I can see something similar. I'm going to follow you and go 1-1, and Jerry going 2-0. Rovers will be flying on confidence after beating the league leaders 3-0. I think this is a game, as you said, Waterford produced lots of chances last time. Rovers scored 3 goals. This should, I think, two teams probably have a good go at each other here. Could be a higher scoring draw even than 1-1, but I'll stick with that for now. Galway United against Sligo Rovers. Galway need to get motoring again, and no better time than against the league's bottom team.
The Connacht Derby. Surely to God they'll have to do it. And there's a bit of pressure on now with the fact that they haven't won in their last three, and their last three has been losses.
You were talking about it earlier, about the goals Sligo are conceding. Galway are conceding goals as well that we wouldn't have expected from Galway compared to recent seasons. Yeah. Even if you look, how many games are we in now? We're about
14 or whatever.
14, and they've conceded, you know, 17 or 18 or 19. Like, it's not a horrendous defensive record.
Yeah.
But it's not a Galway defensive record from seasons gone by either. Now, was that ever sustainable? I don't really know. We thought it was earlier in the year. I still think they'll just be that little bit too hardy here. It could be a set piece or something like that that wins them the game. I'm going to go 1-0.
I'm going to go 2-0 to Galway.
And Jerry going 1-0 to Galway as well. Drogheda United against Derry City. A tough run of games for Drogheda here. Derry have found this fixture troublesome in the past. I was there last year when Drogheda beat them. That was a game where you kind of knew the title was gone or getting away from Derry. But yeah, Drogs have heavy beating against Rovers. They've had some tough games recently. Derry are flying. Do you view Derry as favourites for the game?
I don't.
Oh. Back to basics for Drogheda this week?
I think so. Well, to a degree, yeah. But I don't think there's enough to fear in this Derry side yet. Like, they're not, I don't find them particularly ruthless or anything like that.
Don't trust them. I asked you earlier about the title.
If you're Derry never current, even came into my brain.
Yeah, if you're going on current form, probably Shamrock Rovers and Derry are probably the form teams. But I think there's a rick or two in them alone. No, there's a rick or two in Rovers, as we've always said about that defensive line. But I suppose they've been there and done it. So they've proven they can get over that.
And they've also conceded the fewest goals this season.
Yeah, there you go.
Along with Pats. So, like, they're no bollocks either. Like,
I think this will be a tight game. I don't think we'll see another 3-0 type result here.
No, I'm going to go for Drogheda to nick it. Particularly after a 3-0 baiting, I think there might be a bit more of a, right, let's have a look here, see what we can do.
And I've said this a few times before about Kevin Doherty's trot. They've proven they can correct themselves very quickly. I think of games before where they've got a heavy beating, and next time they go back to basics and they get a result. And they're very, very good at that. And even last, like, they've taken hammerings off Derry in recent seasons. I think I remember them losing 5-1 or something up in the Brandywell. And then they went to the Aviva and they did a job on them in the cup final last season. Like, they were with a way better team. So they've got the capabilities to correct things when they go wrong. It's one of the big strengths about Kevin Doherty and that draw of the team. So,
Touch on that a bit more.
Like, I don't think that they won't be fearing Derry coming to town at all.
There isn't a team in the country to fear Derry. You know, I'd say Longford 14s wouldn't fear them.
Can't wait to talk about Derry winning 4-0 on the pod next week.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's fine. But I don't see that happening, to be quite honest. I think the good thing about Kevin and obviously Dara and the whole backroom staff, they're able to identify the issues.
Mm.
And obviously that's a big part. But as you said, to rectify those exact things and for the players to go and execute, which is what we've seen. Now, obviously, you could argue they didn't execute the game plan the other night because they got bet 3-0.
Mm.
But I think the way that they have been able to identify issues and resolve them quite quickly is so important. I'm going to stick with a 1-0 to draw today here.
Okay, I'm going to go 2-2 here on this one. And Jerry going 1-1. Bows against shells. This should be a right old...
A humdinger.
Yeah.
Very hard to know here because, you know, Bows have been dead buried in a few games and then, you know, Tyson Fury job.
We'll be keeping an eye on the touchline here as well. Will there be a handshake?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. Some mammy needs to come on and tell all these children to cop on. I couldn't care less whether they had a handshake or not. I think it's something that you should be doing. Pure handbags bullshit. I don't even care about it really. I think Bows, cheers sir, has the moose been set free now? Is he gonna go mad and score a heap of goals and be gone in a few weeks? It's very hard to know. I think this is a very, very tight game. Very difficult.
Yeah, I can't really call this at all. So, you know, you probably know what I'm going to do here.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 to shells.
Yeah, going 1-1, but there's probably a late goal in here somewhere. Jerry going 2-2. So, yeah, everyone finding it hard to call that one, really. And then, is this maybe the most open and shut case of the weekend? St. Pat's against Cork City?
You'd imagine so, but the bluntness of Pat's at the minute... I wouldn't say it's just open and shut. You'd expect him to wait and win comfortably. Like, I'm going to say 2-0 to Pats.
Yeah.
But I would have reservations about that. Big time.
Yeah.
Jerry
going 3-0 to Pats.
When they played last, didn't Pats make a ball to that? No. Must have misremembered. Oh, no, they won 2-0 that game. Down in Turner's Cross. That was, I think that was sandwiching between a couple of poor results for Pats. They should be doing the same here. I'm going to go 2-0 to.
Yeah, they drew their game before and after that. All right.
There you go.
Yeah. You're going 2-0.
2-0 Pats.
Yeah, I'll go the same, but I think it'll be one of those kind of just uninspiring 2-0 wins. But
yeah.
Every win is good, you know?
Yeah, well, look, it doesn't have to change your life. It's just 3 points on the board.
That's it. Right, let's go to the BTS hotline now, this time around. Sam, who is a Waterford fan, 7 losses in a row, now 4 wins in a row. If we didn't turn a win into a loss against Pats and Cork in stoppage time, we'd be top. Another normal Blues season. I know you hate all that. If we did this, if we did that, if me auntie had this. I know you can't stand that type of stuff. So.
Yeah.
There you go. Get who is worse away from home, the town or Pats?
Well, I think the number of games that has gone since Longford Town won away from home is...
A friend of ours has had a child, and the child has never seen the town win away. The child's nearly a year old now.
Yeah, great. There's definitely been... A few times at Longford Town should have picked up a win away from home, even the last game of the season last year. I know no one cares about it. They're still 2-0 up. Managed to shit the togs there. Shit the togs in Harps. I don't care what anybody says, that was 2 points dropped, should never have happened. I think it was a good result for Longford Town on Friday. And then, you know, a couple of other games. Like, they did very well. Like I say, when you look back, I never thought they were going to beat Dundalk in Oriel Park, but I don't...
Yeah, they lost nothing in defeat that night, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Just on Pats, though, three consecutive away losses now against Bowes, Derry and Shelburne. That's five losses from eight. Only the bottom two have worse away records this season.
Yeah, not good enough.
Cork City yet to win away from home. They're the only team hasn't won an away game yet. So you'd think
Pats... And the next away game for Pats is in Tallaght. And Shamrock Rovers don't exactly have a great away record either at the moment. They've only won two as well.
Mm.
So, you know, a couple of changes required. But he both at the top of the table have won four away from home. Mad.
Right, back to the hotline. Actually, we've got another, you'll love this, another Longford Town question. It's from Zaki. Longford Town with no away wins in nearly a year. Should there be more pressure on the management, or is it a case they are doing the best with what they have? Look, I suppose we spoke about recently about, what manager were we talking about? We're talking about Keith Long. Before he left Waterford, and we said, like, Keith's around the game a long time. He knows, no matter who you are and what you've done, if you're down that end of the table, let it be Premier Division or First Division, and you haven't won in 6, 7 or 8 games, you're bringing pressure to your doorstep. And I'm sure Wayne Groves is no different. I know he's in the game nowhere near as long as Keith Long, but he'll be aware, if he goes on a 7, 8, 9, 10 game winless streak, there's going to be questions asked by supporters and by people. In terms of the tools that he's working with at the minute, as Zaki kind of asked there, like, I think it's probably no secret Longford Town have probably the lowest budget in the division. Just so we don't have Harps fans and Treaty fans, whoever else, saying, no, we have a smaller budget. Longford Town probably have one of the three lowest budgets in the division. So generally, bar the odd Leicester City story here and there, teams finish based on budgets. And Longford Town at the moment, they may be the bottom team now, but one win and they could be, I think, 6th or 7th in the league.
Correct.
So they're kind of level with where they should be right now. So I don't think there's any real great panic on, but I'm sure the manager realises, you know, I can't go 2 years without a win away from home or I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I think, like, there's an understanding there of the limitations that are there budget-wise. You know, there's been a lot of money pegged into other places. Even at Lone, for example, like, they did quite well by a lot of people's estimations in the transfer market in January. And they're level on points at Longford Town at the minute, I think. Or in and around that cut.
Yeah.
So, and that's only because Athlone won on Friday.
Mm.
So,
like, I think Aaron Doran himself said it recently when he was speaking to club media for Longford. He said, like, at the minute we're down there, but one win and you're up there, you're talking about playoffs. So it's not like they've been cut adrift from anything. They are where, you know, their budget probably specifies they should be at the moment. So I think it's probably premature in the season yet to be talking about under fire managers in the first division. I think everyone is kind of really where they should be. Bar Bray, who have massively overachieved.
Yeah.
Maybe Wexford have hit a bit of a rocky patch, but generally the league table kind of looks like most people would have expected it to look, bar maybe Athlone, who are the big underachievers. Right, next question that comes in from Brian. Great run of results for Derry and Rovers. The league is still tight, but at this stage, who do you think are 1, serious contenders, 2, the pretenders, and 3, dark horses? I think Rovers, genuine contenders.
Yeah.
I still have Shells as contenders.
I'd still put Shells in as contenders.
On the squad have to be serious contenders.
Yeah.
That Derry,
not a dark horse.
Derry are pretenders for me.
Yeah.
Draw the dark horses. Bowes, where are they?
Still pretenders.
Yeah, 7 losses from 15. And that's really it title-wise, isn't it? Like,
Yeah,
fair enough. Lee Conroy, who's a Drogheda fan. Drogs back down to earth after Friday, would still take 8th and avoid any relegation worry for this year. Rovers deserved winners.
I think that's a bad way to look on it. Like,
he thinks they'll stay where they are for the rest of the season. So Lee thinks that Rovers are going to be winners. Dermot McDonagh, my beloved Galway have been figured out. Yeah, that's concerning. And Monbo's, how many goals can the Moose realistically get? Obviously, he started slow and he's had his injury issues, but Kelly and Afolabi both started slow too. Moose strikes me as a player who can come good with form, but part of me doubts his attitude at times.
I think that's a difficult one because of his recent history without a club for so long and question marks over a number of his off the pitch, you know. I don't say behavior because I don't know, but like attitude wise and stuff like that, like there's a reason that he's not wasn't playing football before Bose came along. It was a great win against Sligo. You know, it would have been a bit of a frustrating one if he didn't step up and smash it. But I'm not 100% sure if they'll get those opportunities. I think probably come the end of the season, I think he might be a bit of a flop. 1 goal in 15. I know he hasn't played all those games and injuries and stuff like that, but I don't, like I would say, Kelly came good, what, in his second season in Bose, wasn't it?
I know, it was in his first. It took him, it was after the summer, I think, he really took off, if I remember rightly.
And then he did the next year?
No, he was on loan at Pats. And it never happened for him. And then he went to Bose and he had a real slow start at Bose.
Yeah.
And then he came good in the second half of that season. That's how I remember it anyway.
I don't think that was 2021.
I don't know.
It was, yeah, because he scored against Longford Town up in Daly Mount in the second half second game of the season that year. I don't see it in the same way as that, to be quite honest. I don't think he has the same work ethic as the other two players mentioned in that conversation.
And just the last tweet we received, I'm going to read out. This wasn't actually part of the hotline, but I put out a tweet earlier on the BTS account. It was just highlighting the fact that the League of Ireland released its first ever report into players' mental health today, and 63% of the players surveyed met the criteria for at least one symptom of a common mental disorder, which is a little bit worrying, I suppose. But I suppose it's good to see that the League have invested time and I imagine maybe money into looking into this, because me and you, I suppose, the fact we're around clubs that bit more, you know, we'd be at games early and we're knocking around the pitch and we'd speak to certain players and we'd just hear little things every so often where, oh, you know, that lad hasn't been playing for a while or whatever, you know, is he injured, and he's been having, we kind of hear stuff like that, don't we? It's more common than people realize, and we often talk about it here, about player has a bad game or a manager has a bad spell or even referees have a bad game. You don't know what's going on off the pitch at the same time. And it's very easy to forget that these are just normal people like me and you, and they're not making the millions of quid that the Premier League players are making. And even then you can still suffer with issues off the pitch. But I thought Keith Murphy just lightened the mood a little bit. He said in a separate report, it showed that 100% of League of Ireland fans met the criteria for at least one symptom of a common mental disorder. So I thought that was a funny tweet, but as I said, it's good to see that the league are putting some attention on that. And look, if you are someone out there that's suffering at the moment, then do reach out to the relevant bodies and get the assistance you need. But look, hopefully this podcast has put a bit of a pep in your step if you're listening in the morning time, as most of you do. I know a lot of people listen, they said they love it on the commute to work, so hopefully it's put you in the right mood for the day. But that was Series 9, Episode 14 of Between the Stripes LOI Podcast with Kieran Burke and Gary Riley. We were brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. Gary, you can now go and enjoy your Eurovision.
On the town.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.